500 years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck. And upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
The Phantom!
The ghost who walks!
The Phantom!
Enemies beware, the Phantom's always there, but you won't mind the Phantom. He finds you.
Welcome to the Phantom Podcast. Today, this is episode 62, and we have not one, but two guests to talk a bit of Phantom and talk a bit of everything else. But before we introduce the guests, let us introduce the regulars, Dan and Stephen. Dan?
G'day, Germ. How are you? Hello, everyone.
Not bad, mate. And Stephen? Stephen? It must be the fact that Hawthorne are on the bottom of the ladder and Stephen is a no-show. But never mind.
We're recording this on the night of the Gold Coast Suns thrashing of Hawthorne, and now Stephen doesn't want to talk to us.
Staunch.
No, he's being a good family man, really, isn't he?
Yeah, no, just for those who are maybe not aware, Stephen is on holidays at the moment. It is school holidays. So, Dan, you've just had your holidays?
Yes, did a spot of camping, went bush, and loved it. Really good to get away from it all. And although I did get in trouble from my family because in the tent, apparently, I was muttering about podcasts and emails in one night. So it's getting in my head. I needed the time away from technology and the internet.
That's good. All right, well, no further delays. Let's us introduce. We have two special guests today. We have a Dr. Paul Mason and Andrew Constant. How are you guys going?
we're just trying to recover from Paul being given some respect. We don't know what to do.
Well, that was in the email that I got, that I had to refer to Paul as a Dr. Paul.
It's got nailed. How?
No.
We're good tonight, mate. Thank you.
It's like the term artist. I don't like using the term. I let others use it if they feel like using it.
You prefer doctor, is the same. I prefer it than artist with an E on the air.
I prefer pencil monkey. Dan pencil monkey, and that's my job. So.
All right, so for those who don't know who those voices are, or even don't know the creative team of the soon-to-come-out-through latest invention called Kid Phantom. So, Paul and Andrew, if you could just maybe spend a minute or two just introducing yourself.
Sure. I'll go ahead. I'll let Andrew go first.
Yeah, because always send me into the fire. Yeah, that's fair. I've been a comic book writer now for about 6 or 7 years. I've mostly done work with Gestalt in the past. I've also done some work for a few different companies, which will soon be released, I hope. I've also done some work in America for a company, which, it's so terrible, I can't talk about much of this stuff right now until it gets released, but there's something coming out this year from a big American company.
Is that one of the big two or one of the other bigger ones?
Potentially. I don't mind talking about it, but I'm not sure what they think about it. So, yeah, it's one of the big two. And I've also been doing some script writing as well. I've been around for a little while now, but clearly not long enough.
Yes. I've been doing comics for about 6, 7 years now. Started with a creator-owned book as part of my honours year of my Bachelor of Animation. And from there, I got a bit of traction with that book. That was A Soldier Legacy. I've got some work for Gestalt, which I'm hoping will come out this year. I've had some stuff published overseas. I did a book, an anthology book on the Human Fly, which was the old Marvel character from the 1970s. Some work on a local book, Dark Detective Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm fortunate enough to be doing some Furu work. So I also lecture. My other day job is a lecturer at the Queensland College of Arts at Griffith University for the Griffith Film School.
Have you also mentioned you're one of fourth Dan black belt in Taekwondo?
I fought in maybe six, potentially my seventh world championship coming up later in the year in the Netherlands.
Basically, Paul is what we'd all like to be.
Yeah, I need an extra 24 hours, and then I'd just sleep it. So,
No worries. So, yeah. Paul, I've read Soldier Legacy. I'm a little bit behind, but I have read. I think I've got the first trade paperback. Sorry?
My condolences.
I actually really enjoyed it. I must admit, when I was reading it, I picked up on so many fandom elements, like with obviously like with the generational legacy, you know, like the oath in a sense. So I'm assuming you're a bit of a fandom fan growing up.
I am. He was the first character I remember specifically reading in comic form. It always as a character, I think that moral fiber that he always holds in there. I know a lot of people float towards, say, Batman, for instance, as their favourite character. I think the Phantom, at the very least, you know, regardless of the fact that his ancestors take up this dark and brooding mantle, he's still okay to smile and have a family and, you know, live the good life, so to speak, while battling piracy. And I kind of always dug that. That sense of legacy and honour for a previous generation. So I guess it was partly that, partly my sort of close family in regards to my grandfathers and wanting to do the right thing in that sense that really inspired that genesis of that Australian character ideal. So.
Mm.
And what about you, Andrew? Have you always been a fan as well or a more recent convert?
No, that's an F yeah to the first idea. I had parents who really wanted me to read. I had to read because I had a few speech issues when I was younger, and reading was going to be a really great help. So my mum, being the great person that she was, went, "Well, here you go. Here's Phantom Comics." First thing she put in my lap, and it was my gateway drug, as it were. And it really was like, no, it's funny because I am funny. No, I'm really unfunny. I'm the unfunny, unfunny guy.
This is true.
It was the Phantom. Like, my dad was into it as a report Phantom comes. I was like, "I mean the Phantom." Mm. And from there, I got into a similar character, the Batman. And it's always been those type of characters. It's always been Phantom's the prototype.
Yeah.
It's the character who, whilst when he may appear to be on the dark side of the veil of heroism, is actually the one doing the most good, which is, you know, which is also the pulp hero legacy as well, which has also been a massive influence on my work. So I guess, short story long, yes.
So what do your parents and stuff like that, do they kind of find it funny that that you're now doing Phantom?
Yeah, look, my parents always knew where I was going, basically. I was writing from a young age. I was a journalist when I was 15. I did all sorts of stuff, but it was always superheroes basically in comic books, and it's just such an enduring, visceral form of storytelling. And the fact that I'm doing the Phantom now, that I remember my dad going, like, "I've done other work on comic books," and dad was like, "Yeah, that's great, good one, thanks, mate." So I was doing the Phantom, and he said, "What the hell, Phantom? Come here, tell me more. Oh my god, I tell him what I'm doing, the kid Phantom. He's like, "That's a great idea," and there's just love, I'm back in the wheel, so you know.
Yeah. No, I had my parents, my family have always been my number one cheer squad, for better or for worse. Mm. And I think the fact that I'm doing something that they recognize, you know, like I preface that little, for the conventions, I had a little work in Pocket Phantom, and I preface that book by saying that my mother was a single mum and I was only a kid, you know, the Phantom helped me out of some pretty sort of dark situations that we were stuck in. So it's kind of full circle where I started my, you know, hobbyist Australian comic career doing a vigilante running around in the jungle with a mask, and then sort of coming full circle now, getting to do a vigilante in a jungle in a mask. but it's something that's they recognise. It's something with an Australian legacy, you know, despite the fact that we all know that the, you know, where the character's origins were. So, you know, parents are they're always over the moon regardless of what I do. I think they're just happy that I've found something that I'm quite happy with.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what Could you guys maybe share with us what were your favourite Phantom stories growing up, or did you have particular, you know, artists that you particularly enjoy, or you know, what would be your favourite story?
Honestly, I always go back to the original story of the Sin Brotherhood. It's hard for me to say growing up because I read the dailies a lot and it all became one big, like, you know,
Barry's soap opera. No, that's very,
yeah, like Barry as well was such an important part of that, like the way he drew the character. But I would actually have to say, look, because I've been doing a lot of, like, I've read everything recently. I've gone top to tail. I always go back to the first one, the Sin Brotherhood, just because it's a strong footprint, such a strong start for the character. Like, they're like everything which we like about the Phantoms in the first story as well, the type of enemies, the type of person he is, his personal strength, his moral characteristics. I like the way it sets up. Like, it's like going back to the original other, like, a strong superhero starts strong as well, or a strong hero starts strong, I should say. And that first story, to me, sets up that character, well, sets up what is still a great character, will always be a great character so well. Having said that, well, I also enjoy the Python Strikes Back, just because it's a different point of view of the character. Like, there's a hint of tragedy that something terrible has happened there, which, of course, is remedied because the Phantom is awesome. But it's a different approach as well. I think you see that's both the same character, but they give a wonderful and different perspective on Kit there.
I have to agree. I love Ray Moore's. He has these sort of dramatic posing in the characters, even like, you know, with Diana or any of the female characters, the way that they, it's hard. I'm sitting here like an idiot trying to show you a pose and where I'm.
It looks amazing. Just yeah.
Thanks, man. I love the Skype game. I liked.
That's actually, yeah, no, that's a wonderful story.
I like the introduction of Mr. Hogg.
Mr. Hogg.
Yeah, I do. I love. It's like it's almost Dick Tracy in that sense of the you know, rogue gallery, so to speak.
I think that raises a good point. Is that look, the best heroes have the best bad guys as well, right?
Mm. Yeah,
the has some bad guys. Like, yeah, you know, the Sky Band, Python, Nomad. Like, who do you if you want to find a bad guy to your taste, if you want to find a nemesis, which you really think, you know, a villain should be, the Phantom has it. Yeah.
Yes.
I agree. No, but I think every artist that has worked on the Phantom, that I've been influenced by, has always brought something different to the table. So I do like Ray Moore's stuff for its dark and moodiness to the line work, the hatching, the contorted sort of poses. Wilson McCoy, I've been digesting a lot of that stuff recently because that was something that I wanted to at least keep that kind of thick, open line for the Kid Phantom stuff, you know, touch on that aspect to the work. Cy Barry, of course, Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
I like the modern artists as well, Terry Beattie. You know. So there's a range. I could go on with this.
Yeah. It's a very, I think Paul and I have been talking about this, it's a very complete universe. Come on board, it's always had that through line of always being the Phantom.
Yep. And the costume has barely altered, you know, and I dig that.
Iconic, man. Yeah. Like, you know, there's nine, they haven't changed at all.
No. Anyway. I think we went far beyond the question there. I apologize.
No, that's all right. I think you've answered a couple of questions. So what about the heroes in the from a more broader range, from like comic and the art world, and then also for Andrew is also in like the writing world as well. Do you have like specific heroes?
For me, number one would be Jack Kirby.
Yeah,
he's a creative dynamo. He doesn't get his dues in public. I did have a child the other day. I was drawing a picture for him, and he goes, "Wow, you draw as well as Stan Lee." You had to bite my tongue. I'm like, this young man, or do I just let it slide? I did. You know what he kept saying, and I said, you know, actually Stanley used to draw the word balloons, but I said,
so maybe that was his point though.
Do you have a point you're trying to make there, Paul? Yeah. I'm a big fan of Kirby's work. He's a machine. His characters, I can't say enough about Kirby. I do also like Harvey Kurtzman. I love Will Eisner. John Romita Jr., Greg Capullo, Nicola Scott, of course. Like, there's a John Somariva, you know.
Yeah.
Holgate. There's a bunch of different people that I love for various different reasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I feel like I'm hogging the questions.
No, actually, I always find it interesting. Coming from a writing discipline as well, it's always fascinating about how the diverse array of styles that are out there and all how technically proficient they are. Like, I know all the people you mentioned there and all their styles are different as well, but all bring such a unique point of view to their character. They're always on point, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
Writers, as soon as you said that, my brain just went, ha-ha, bye, and shut down. The first writer who I fell in love with was, I read lots when I was young. Like, I read Neuromancer by William Gibson when I was 11 years old, and that fried my brain, and they've been the same since. I'm joking, I'm still to this day just going, ha-ha, no idea what I'm doing. Comic books, Grant Morrison, Greg Braca.
I'd agree with
Garth Ennis.
Oh, Ennis. How did I leave him out?
Well, you're a World War II guy, man.
I loved, Ennis and Parlov did that Fury, My World Gone By. Ennis did Colin Wilson. There you go. Yep, right on the shelf next to you. Yep,
yep. Great Nick from Punisher.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I'm just hijacking your question.
No, do that.
Go ahead.
I like Jason Aaron. I like Joe Gill. I'm a big reader. Like, if you want to be a writer, all you're going to do is read, then write, rinse, repeat. So, you know, it really, and as you get older as well, you become less involved with the writer than the work. Like as I've gotten older, I've become a fan of Richard Stark. I've become who writes really poppy crime, Parker books.
Yep. Darwin Cook I left out of the mix, and he's the guy that helped drive this book, for God's sake. Jesus.
Basically, I think what Paul and I want to say, like, I'm looking at my shelf now, but I've got Brubaker.
Basically, we're nerds.
Yeah. Seriously, you should come to one of our conversations one day. We start off with one word and suddenly it becomes like a four-hour conversation about have you read this today? Well, I'm going to have to read it now, arsehole. Thank you.
Yeah, pretty much it. My Netflix list of this has just exploded exponentially, and I'll never get time to watch it. No.
Well, I've given you Breaking Bad.
Which, I know, yeah.
Just for the last season alone, that is amazing.
Hell of high water. Well, I got you onto The Godfather, so.
Okay, I just want to point out that I have major gaps in my life. I've never watched The Godfather before, and Paul wouldn't talk to me until I watched it. So I watched the first one, and I gave him a call and said, I'm an idiot. I'm the dumbest, dumbest man who's ever walked the face of the earth. Why have I never watched this?
Yeah.
So how did you two meet?
Well, we're in a camp for idiots.
And we decided, I loosened my straitjacket and busted out of the ward. And
you are the chief, aren't you?
Yeah, right. I jumped into your room until the coast was clear, and then I thought I'd better free you too.
How did we meet?
We met at San Diego Comic Con.
Don't tell the
story. Oh, I love this story. No, don't. It's fantastic, right?
No,
we can tell this story.
Okay.
So it's 2011?
2011.
You were over there with Gestalt. I just released Torn.
Yep.
I was, I came to the DC booth. Nicola Scott was there. I was with another writer that you guys are familiar with now, Chris Aquira. We met you. You had a flick through some of my older Soldier books, and basically were like, yeah, work on your anatomy, work on your perspective.
I was not that bad.
You dismissed me.
I want to give a bit of background. He loves putting me in the crapper. Thank you, Paul. I just released my first book. Yes, first books are like murder, basically. You think they're not good enough. You question everything. It's terrible. Four people who were helping me out of being six, I had to cover their stuff as well in promotion. And I was actually, when I saw the Soldier Legacy as well, I actually really liked the book. They just came up and on that one day, which is like, please let this end. I don't care how much I like comic books. Come and put a bullet and just put me in the ground. and he just came up and showed me where I was like, this is really good, but if I can get resting, like, sociopath face if I'm not careful sometimes, if I'm working a lot. I just went, this is really good. And it was just dead eye, wasn't it?
Yeah, shark man.
But then we met later that convention.
Yeah, we did. It would have been Melbourne Oz Comic Con 2012,
and we hang out.
And I think we'd been
Christian Reed.
Yeah, Christian Reed.
The writer Christian Reed, who writes writes for video games overseas. He also does some Gestalt books too. We're in the process of wrapping up a Supernatural Western book.
But, yeah.
We were sitting around
which
in the
bar.
Which
looks amazing, by the way.
Yeah, suck. we were sitting in a bar talking Jack Kirby war stories. Mm. He used to, you know, fight Nazis and, you know, for real, and then draw Captain America fighting Nazis. So, yeah, and then we just got on, I guess.
Yeah, we sort of ended up hanging around each other at shows because we're the only really tall guys.
Yeah, the only guys that could make eye contact.
And we worked out that we had a lot of the same influences and interests. And we
Mike Tyson fights.
Yeah. and we basically worked out that we wanted to do the same type of work. We've actually been looking for a project for 3 or 4 years to work.
And I guess we went on a holiday late last year. A bunch of us creators went away and just sit around. I had the Kid Phantom 1 deadlines, so I was drawing, and there was a moment in the book where I was trying to flesh out, and I found that Andrew was really helpful for that. And once we sort of got back to the real world, we just decided this would be a project that we should forge ahead with.
We can talk more if you want.
So I guess one last question before we get on to Kid Phantom. Did you guys enjoy the Phantom movie?
Oh, which one are you talking? You're talking
the 96 one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, very quick follow up on that.
You go ahead.
Yeah, I did, but I enjoy films separate from the original works. It's something I had to come with terms with a long time ago. Because lots of things I like have been adapted over years. Like, that's not what I... Oh, okay, fine. And I enjoy it as a film. I enjoy it for its being... It clearly has a lot of affection for the work. But at the same time, it is what it is. It's a 1996 $20 million film that looks like it's great fun. But it's not the Phantom we know. But still, I think, a loving representation of it.
Yeah, I... As a sort of an illustrator on a project... You try to find as many visual representations as you can get when you try to put together your reference canon. And I recall watching it in the 90s. I think I enjoyed it a lot more now. I feel like it's one of those 90s movies that aged well, considering it was a superhero book, but it was also a pulp superhero.
That sounds like an amazing podcast. 90 films that aged badly.
Yeah, look, I listened to one that... All that stuff, but I probably shotgunned that movie maybe a dozen times in the first week that I got the project. I went online and I searched. I watched the Tom Tyler series. I watched the obscure '60s pilot that's very hard to find with Richard Kyle in there. I watched Defenders of the Earth.
I love Defenders of the Earth.
Yeah. I watched the Phantom 2040.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Did you have to take a drink beer and a panel afterwards?
It wasn't too bad, but the Billy Zane movie. Look, I know it deviates a little bit from what we know as the law regarding how you show the Phantom.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. I actually went and bought my own copy because originally I borrowed it off a mate of mine who's a dedicated writer. He's Brad Mengel, his name is, and he gave me a whole stack of Phantom books as soon as I got that project. Mm. So I went to Sanity, and for $8.99, I ordered my own copy of the Billy Zane movie and watched it again and again. I actually have it here in my suitcase if I ever need a kind of bit of inspiration. I think it's just the thing around on screen, regardless of the plot flaws or... You know, the little stunt work reminds me of a Warner Brothers Movie World stage show, you know what I mean? So apart from that, I dig the man in blue running around, and I'd love it to get a modernised treatment.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. So.
Did you watch the sci-fi one from a couple of years ago?
Oh, you know what? I blocked it from my memory. I did. I got as far as... there was one of those things where I'd watch a little bit,
Then I'd have to turn it off, walk around the house with my hands on my head, come back, sit and watch it again. Because it's very, like, I mean, for uni, each semester I'm looking at 60 to 70 student projects, reading their scripts, giving them visual feedback. I have to understand story and three-act structure like a writer would. And, I got as far as when Kit finally puts on the parkour purple.
Can we backtrack for a moment?
I couldn't finish it, basically.
Sorry. I haven't seen this, so these are notes I'm terrified of. He puts on a what outfit?
It's like he's
it's like a Ninja Turtle outfit.
Yeah, it's like a paintball visor. With a purple hood.
Okay, we have to stop talking. We have to end this interview right now.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ.
I want to leave. I'm feeling tense. I want Vicodin. Come on.
It was just very. Oh, that's the skull cave. Oh, okay. All right. That's the purple suit.
Look, to be quite honest, I did hear about this film years ago, but everything I heard told me to stay the hell away.
The reason I had to ask you about that question was because on the panel you did in Perth, you did talk a fair bit about the Phantom movies, so I kind of had to let everyone else hear about that because it was quite interesting getting your thoughts about that.
Gut punch from Jermaine.
I hope I haven't offended anybody that likes that series, but if I have, you, yeah.
All right, anyway, we'll move on. For the record, I actually did like the show. I reckon it had potential, but that's probably the nicest thing you can say about it.
That's possibly be the
You, sir, should be working for a diplomatic corps.
Yes.
It's not often that Jermaine gets told that he's being diplomatic, so that's lovely to hear.
Yeah, I've listened to a few shows, so I already...
All right, so what we'll do is we'll just change tact a little bit and we'll talk about Kid Phantom. So now, without getting in trouble from your bosses, what can you tell us about issue one? Because for the majority of the people that will be listening to this probably don't have a WIP book or haven't seen anything bar the little previews that have been posted up on social media and the various weather. So what could you tell us about issue one?
Well, look, I came on from issue two and I've written quite a few issues from there, so it's really best if Paul, in his PhD level brain, tells you what's actually going on.
That's what it says on paper. I wouldn't necessarily say that the brain is caught up to that. But it's not far away, so I'm hoping not to spoil too much regarding it, but what I can say is we used the Avon novel as very much, as Glenn's words said on the previous podcast is correct, it is the Bible. We loved that. I mean, we loved the daily strip, you know, the childhood of the Phantom strip that Wilson McCoy drawn. We felt that the novel fleshed out the bits in between a lot more, and there was some really strong visuals and character dynamics in that book that were just excited us.
Yeah.
Essentially, the first book aims to set the look of the world, of which young Kit, who is the heism, but he's done as a child. Yeah. So it's touching in that era where he's getting to that age of 10. As you guys know, the traditional story is that he gets his education in the country of his mother's origin. So it's getting to that point where it's time for him to leave the jungle. So exactly. the first book kind of sets the tone, the pace of what to expect, and then the series will continue. It's essentially like the Untold Tales of Spider-Man in the 90s with Kurt Busiek, who he worked with Steve Ditko and Stan Lee's universe that they set up. But without leaving too many footprints, he talks about Spider-Man and Peter Parker's adventures as a young Spider-Man without crushing the continuity that people are familiar with. Now, I know Lee Falk was never too dedicated. What I'm trying to say is, and I excuse my stuttering, it's just an inflection that I have. But essentially, he never lets the facts get in the way of a good story. So there's sometimes some conflicting facts here and there. But essentially, we try to...
Some.
Yes. I was being kind. We are very focused in that sense. So we do try to keep within his canon and expand on those adventures in between the lines. So not to give too much away, but essentially in the comic strip, he sort of hugs his father in the deep wood, and the next thing you know, Garan and Kid are on the boat.
Yeah.
In our story, we from issue two in particular, we expand on those moments, so you get the bits in between. There's many adventures that will occur before he even gets to the United States.
We've actually done a lot of work together to really make it a growth story for Kid as well. It's not just him doing things. It's actually going to have a very strong component about his character development, his relationship with Garan. But also it's about a cool young kid in a purple outfit doing amazing things as a Phantom should. It's the Phantom growing up.
Yeah.
And he's always the Phantom. He's always heroic. He's always... knows what the right thing is to do, but he's a kid learning how powerful he actually is.
He's impulsive. And just that sense of, I don't want to say Garan's trying to keep him in check once the adventure kicks off, but Garan has never left the jungle. He's learning the outside world as well. I guess the line we always kind of throw around is that it's the unofficial Pixar version of the Phantom, where it's an all-ages tale where we're hoping a young audience will get into the kind of and the the adventures.
But issue one visually really sets it up, thanks to Paul's art, though. Like, it's a real sense of this is what we're doing, this is where we go, this is the sort of book it is. It's got a real kinetic, energetic flavour to it, beautiful backgrounds. It's a great way for the book to start, really.
Cool. So, do we have an official release date?
Not, I don't know. What did... I can't even recall. We had a meeting with Glenn today, and let's put it this way. It's very close.
It's super close, actually.
The
production's underway, and once the scheduling's done, you'll know that Three will get on that straight away. Like, there's a big, there's going to be a big push. It's not going to just slip onto the shelves.
Just inserting a quick editor's note here that since the recording of this podcast, we have seen Dudley Hogarth, publisher of Fru, announce in the message from the publisher in issue 1780, The Stubborn Sorcerer, the release date of Kid Phantom issue 1 will be April the 27th, 2017.
This is really, what the spirit we're getting from this is really important to everyone involved. Like, this is not just like a, hey, look, here's a book. We want product out there. This is... I haven't been this excited, had this much fun, and this is completely sincere on a book in a very, very long time. Like, this is actually a really exciting work. It's an all-ages work, and we're not talking down to kids. We're talking to people of all ages, surprisingly an all-ages book. But it's...
So,
it's
that raises a very important question, in my opinion, is, like, the Kid Phantom, well, the way I see it is that, it's something for the kids, for 8 to 12 or something, but you just then and in other conversations we've had, you make how do you make that happen, or how do you put in like the Pixar movies, those adult jokes, those adult references, how do you go about that to get the old crusty Forkus who don't like change interested in this as well?
I'll let Andrew answer about the how. Essentially, I think it's like anything. You're never going to please everybody.
No.
I find that I can't – how should I put it? I'm trying to find a nice way of saying I don't care if they don't pick it up, because I'm sure the target audience that we're trying to appeal to hopefully will.
Look, I think, basically
– I know that sounded harsh. You smooth that out for me and I'll just sit back.
No, look, I know what Paul means, though. Like, we are writing this – like, the Thor books – the Faust books to us are canonical. The comic books canonical to us as well.
Mm.
We treat it with the utmost respect. The way the way it's an all-ages book in so far is that we like to think we're writing for, as you said, Jermaine, it's for the 8 to 12 age group, but we're writing intelligently. So it's like when people have read a Harry Potter book or they've read a Roald Dahl book. It's anyone who likes good storytelling can get something out of it. We're not talking down to kids at all, and kids are smart, as you well know. I well know. They always run rings around me, but that's not hard. So all we're really trying to do is just write a smart story that, first of all, appeals to the 8 to 12 market, but anyone else who wants to read it will not feel like they're being spoken down to at all.
Yeah, it's not the Peppa Pig version of Phantom.
No. It's, look, but we've got pirates, we've got adventures at sea, we've got encounters with bullies as well, intelligent relationships between all the parties or all the main characters, and we've also got Phantom action, and we've got Phantom, Kid Phantom in costume as well, being heroic there. So it's in no way, we're not, Kid Phantom does not mean we're shortcutting Phantom at all.
No.
Is it difficult to get yourself into the head of that 8 to 12 year old kid, and how do you put yourself in the place of that?
Well, good question. The answer, which makes me sound like the truth, is I've never gone past 12. I think to be a comic book writer, you've got to be young at heart. You have to have the energy of a Jack Kirby there, or a, you know, you just have to have the ability to empathize with anyone you're writing with. I've written Wolves at Night. I've written 12-year-old robots before. I've written demons coming to life. A writer's job is to find a way into any character, which they do. And the Phantom is the Phantom. Like, there's no other character like him. There's so much material out there. And he's so well loved. So you just pour your heart into it. And it's always, there's always a leap of faith as well. Writing has to be.
Yeah.
If you don't take a leap out there, still keeping in mind, making sure you're doing everything right by the characters, if you don't take that leap of faith, then you're not a good writer, basically. And I like to think I've taken one with the book, and I'm doing my utmost, my absolute utmost to serve it.
Mm. Yep.
So just to take us backwards a step there.
Yes.
About how you, because Paul, you said that you were working on Kid Phantom 1 last year or even longer ago. How was it that you came to be part of the series? And I mean, we think that the gap, that 6-year gap of 10 to 16 that's covered in 2 or 3 panels in the story of the childhood of the Phantom, it's a very clever idea to recognise that and to place this story. Where did that idea come from, and how long has this been coming together?
That's a good question. I'll try and keep this as concise as I can, because I don't want to bore everybody out there. Look, I have a very good friend of mine that, again, you guys are familiar with because of his work on Phantom by Gaslight, Christopher Sequeira. He is one of the reasons why I started doing comics as a career to begin. He was pitching to Glenn that original story, and at the time there was thoughts of me possibly being attached to that, because Chris and I had pitched quite a lot in the past, and had worked on a couple of different stories, one of which we did a crossover with my Soldier Legacy character and his Dark Detective Sherlock Holmes series when we were with the same publisher, Black House Comics. The Soldier had just been picked up by Black House. It was on television in a Yuri Insurance commercial campaign with the masked vigilante running around the streets of London. So when Chris had this opportunity to put something ahead for Glenn and the Fruit Crew, I submitted my folio, parts of that story, pages that I've been currently working on for Gestalt. And although they had another artist in mind, and which was the clever and talented Jason Polos there, Glenn and the crew seem to have already had this idea in Genesis of doing an all-ages book, and it just a case of luck that I came along at the right place and time, that and the right animated kind of style. I had a very much a, because of my Bachelor of Animation degree and, you know, working in honours and teaching, I still had that very, you know, stylized Jack Kirby approach to the poses and the action. So I guess it must have just been a combination of that they asked to do some test pictures of the Phantom in action, and then a little bit about Kid Phantom, not really giving me any details apart from, you know, Phantom as a kid. and I got the pitch material, and the pitch material, it was all in there. So that's something that Fru had been generating before I came along, that aspect of the character. And what was really nice is that I was then given the opportunity to then come at it from an art directing point of view in terms of envisioning what this character and cast of characters and the environment would look like from there. So this was late last year that I kind of came on board after on doing these phantom drawings and sketches and bits and pieces. You know, the outline was given to me late last year, and we forged ahead. So
it all came together.
Yeah, it was very lucky. It kind of reminded me of a friend of ours, Freddie Williams. He happened to drop an email at the right time that they were considering Batman Ninja Turtles, and just walked into it. So
there we go.
It does happen quite often in comics. Just a sense of luck. A sense of, you know, you've got to have the work behind you, of course. You can't just say, oh, I can do that. You know, it was just luck and
also those influences. Paul is pathological in underselling his skill. He's also an incredibly talented at what he does.
Years are getting kicked in the teeth. You don't big note yourself. What did Robert De Niro say in that movie? Never rat on your friends and keep your mouth shut. That's sort of...
That's Goodfellas. I've seen Goodfellas. See, I know that reference.
Yeah, well done.
So, in the Kid Phantom 1, it's got a different writer, Henricus. Is that a pen name or?
I believe it is a pen name. Yes. Yeah. Henricus had a great initial outline of the series. It was great to work with him, but. Andrew came on board, and we're looking at doing something that's hoping to last a very, very long time. And I guess it's up to the readers out there to decide whether it's something worth to keep around or worth the support. So,
but you will see some more work from the guy who did the first issue as well.
That's true. Yes, there is.
Kid Phantom or in something else by Fru?
Something else by Fru that we saw some pages today that looked very exciting. And I don't mean that as in, hey, that looks exciting in quotation.
No, no, no. It actually does look fantastic. But I don't really want to say any more in that sense, because I know Fru have a lot of plans in the works.
Yeah.
And I'd hate to overstep.
Yeah.
Andrew, so has Paul done your work justice in issue 2 onwards?
There are swear words which I could say at the start, then yes, to follow it with explanation marks. But I know we're all ages, so let's not. Paul's an incredible artist who he's blushing right now as I say this, who undersells himself way too much. He has a dynamic style, but more than that, and I think it's something really important, is that he's a storyteller. He's always working on the best approach for each panel to tell the story that needs to be told. And the great thing about giving Paul the script is that he'll ask for notes. And I say, I don't want to give you notes. You are one of the best storytellers I know. So categorically, yes is the short answer.
So, Paul, a follow-on question. How is it working with Andrew on the second? And what type of style does he do in his script? Is he more of a Stan Lee style or more of a DC style?
he's Stan Lee. He does no work and takes all the credit. No. No.
I actually have a massive admiration for all things Marvel. So I
No. I look, you know, Stan Lee, as a child, I loved his work. You know, I still love his voice in the work, but when you're a Kirbyist, there's a lot of stuff there that kind of irks you about the two men with a different point of view. Let's put it that way. No, Andrew is fantastic. It's part of the reason why I went to work with him in the first place. And I'm not just saying this superfluously.
No, right now I'm handing money as he speaks.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. He is very much the DC school in that sense that he writes full script, but he writes in such a way that it doesn't feel like it's going to clog the page. He's aware of the format in regards to the way that the book will be published.
Yeah.
He's respectful of my ideas. he always asks, you know, what do I like to draw, you know, but he'll push me. So there's elements in the second script. We're coming back to the Thousand Warriors again.
I don't sleep. Someone writes a Thousand Warriors into a script, and you know, lo and behold, you're
up all night. I was trying to be impressionistic on that one. I wasn't expecting a literal translation.
Yeah, well,
yeah, it's so great.
If I'd wrote and written that scene, Kit and Garan would be walking through the jungle with one Vandar warrior, and that's all you're gonna get. So I'm glad that he.
You know, it was impressionistic. It was like a thousand warriors. Yeah. Make it look like a thousand warriors.
I'm with you. Yeah. There'd be a lot of conversations with Garan and Kit in a little white room, or perhaps fighting in a snowstorm. No, he's on board and he pushes me. And as I said, part of the direction that I wanted to take with the book is because it was going to be for kids and, I loved widescreen panels like Goran Pavlov, and I like when Kirby stretched into those sort of four panel pages. And Darwin Cook's DC New Frontier was a huge influence on the visual kind of approach to this particular book. He understands the medium enough so that he's not he lets me breathe.
As
an illustrator on the page.
Not to jump in there, but it's very important. But like I think. Writing comics means you're writing for an artist to draw a book. You're not a frustrated book, which means writing to make sure that the artist has space to be a great artist. You're not trying to put words over their work. You're trying to cut your words back, so you're merely helping the story out. And dialogue, to me, is all about assisting the story, not being the story there. So I have a great joy when I see his work and I can cut dialogue out because his work is far more effective than my words. And I think that comes back to the idea that as a comic book writer, you're not being paid for the words, you're being paid for the story. So in effect, the most important thing I can do is make sure that I respect what we're trying to do and give him the best story to draw, because he is a storyteller himself.
So do you have a process where there's a bit of back and forth? Well, obviously there's a lot of back and forth between you, but in terms of you, Andrew, Andrew, you've handed the script over. Paul, you draw the story. It goes back to Andrew to adjust the script again, because that's very different from what we've heard, for instance, about Lee Falk and Cy Barry. So it sounds like a very collaborative approach.
It can't help but be. This isn't a solo job. This is two people trying to do the best work possible. So my idea is I'll write the script. We'll talk about it for a while. So, we'll talk about what the feel is as well. Then what Paul will do, which I never ask, but he wants to do it because he's a really kind collaborator as well, is he'll give me thumbnails or small pictures of the book. We'll discuss it. I've had one note so far and over all the paper thumbnails he's given me, which is one note about a shoe, basically. Can you do this with a shoe? And Paul's like, okay. And beyond that, you know, it's perfect. And then, but most of the time it's more about discussing the atmosphere of the story.
I think there's moments there where we talked about something in issue 3 today. With
really small things as well.
Things in issue 3 have come up, one where, Kit donning the uniform, and another where he's going to engage the thing that I'm trying not to give away. There's those sort of character moments that it's essentially just trying to reinforce what the characterizations are, how to show that visually, even down to the support cast and how they interact with the main two. We see this at the moment as it's almost like a buddy cop movie in a sense of Garan and Kit and their relationship development.
Because you need a two-hander, they're like two young kids off to America together, basically. You know that they're going to get in strife. I get in strife walking down the road, and, I'm...
and not dressing in purple.
With Paul, it's definitely just more of a conversation there.
We
like to talk to each other about the work. It's not like one of those relationships where a writer sends away a script and that's it. The best comic books I know of have strong collaborations, the artist and the writer work in unison. The relationship is equal in all senses there, and the best work gets pardon me, the best work gets done that way.
It's that element of trust. There's a lot of writers that I've read when I was doing my thesis, looking at a lot of the popular writers and artists and how they approach scripts, regardless of whether it's plot-driven or writer-driven scripts. There's always that level of trust the higher up the tier that they go in terms of the creative process that give the best comics. It's not a work for hire. Here's your scripts. Don't communicate with the writer.
No.
Or here's your drawings. Don't communicate with the artist. You know, so there's very much that freedom to collaborate and throw in ideas and make sure by through we're crossing the T's and dotting the I's, so to speak.
Yeah.
So how is it working with Fru?
Fantastic.
Actually, it's been I've worked for, one or two people now, and Fru have been actually quite amazing to work with.
Mm.
You can have differences of opinion with editors, and I haven't had that yet. The notes are really good as well. It's about story direction there. It's about making sure we're doing the right thing by the characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really, and I know this sounds like the line you get from movies. Oh, I think such a wild experience.
Yeah, no. It
actually has, and if it hadn't been, I'd be like, yeah, it's great, next. But, it's been a wonderful experience. Paul's been great, and the studio's been great, and the character's great. It's all been... God, it sounds like I just swallowed a bowl of Prozac. I'm sorry, guys. It really has been a tremendous experience so far.
Yeah, I can't speak highly enough. I've worked freelance for a number of employers over the years. Thankfully, none that I've mentioned. Who I've had to either walk away from a job because of the notes and the ridiculous expectations versus the pay. This is not cool. Or, you've just begrudgingly gone through the process and wish that you'd never done it in the first place. But I can't speak highly enough. They always check to see if there's anything that you need. If we need any source material, reference material, they always... help us out.
My Phantom collection has never looked so shiny.
Yeah, it's very healthy.
I love it, and I'm a studious reader, but you don't realise how much material is until you have it physically sitting beside your bed and go, I might have to put it on the floor so I've got more room on my bedside table.
Yeah,
I've got a whole bedroom full of source material, a whole room full of it.
What's your address? When are you out of your house? Part of being a writer as well, you need to know how to store your material. Otherwise, you're just going to live in you're going to look like that hoarder from down the road who everyone gives side eyes to. So I've learned to be quite. I've had to move a lot of stuff out to move my Phantom stuff in, which is quite a lot of fun actually.
Mm.
So what's been your favourite part of doing the series so far?
The money. No.
Jokes.
I think we're kind of in a roundabout way. We're kind of I'm working with the best mate.
Who's that person you speak of?
Well, it's not you. working for a company that respects us and the property. They know it inside out. There is a heritage there. There's a legacy there with the character as well. There is a genuine love for it, even if people haven't been actively reading it for a while. They seem to be generally supportive. I guess those are probably... I'm working on one of my characters I grew up with, It's just... And is loved around the world, so it really boggles the mind.
It's just one of those things that keeps on accumulating from work, from getting the character to working with Paul to seeing the stories come together so well. So seeing the art and the stories. And it's nice. Everything about it's been like the joyous thing about writing a young kid with all the energy of such a joyous creative team as well. It does make such a difference there. I have swallowed the Prozac, I admit it, but it's honestly been it has been my favorite experience in comics so far.
Oh, that's awesome. So, number one you've said is coming out soon. You've talked about issues 2 and 3 already. How far ahead, how many issues have already been written and illustrated and sort of locked away.
You're drawing at the moment.
Yeah, that's on the downward. I was going to say downward spiral. No, that's not. That
Jesus.
No, no. We don't talk about your word association. Yeah, connotations. No.
No.
No, I'm on the downhill run for that one. That's issue, not far away.
Issue three, it's written as well, and you've started storyboarding that one as well.
Yeah.
Big adventure issue.
Lots of purple. Lots of purple.
Lots of purple. And I've started working on issue four as we speak. Some others agree, and some think I'm a lunatic. To make sure that we have a few issues always locked away, because that way there's nothing worse than an artist waiting for a writer. It's not how it should be. Paul should have a chance to read a while ahead to see what he thinks of the script and give me notes so I can make those changes. So we're about one issue or so ahead with notes on further issues. I've got oodles of ideas. I just got ambushed by Paul and threw it. They said, why don't we throw this in the next issue? I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing that. Cool.
That was perfect. When the editor backs up a stupid idea that you...
not stupid.
I know it's not. That's why I pitched it.
But it's actually really quite cool, and it reinforces all the ideas so far are playing. We're not wedging story in because it fits some agenda we're trying to fill. It's all like, and I put this in quotation marks, organic.
Mm.
So that way we're always writing the best story for what we're trying to do.
Nice. Now, you've been to two Comic Cons since the announcement has been made. What's the feedback been like?
They love Paul, hate me. No. No, they hate Paul, love me, I don't know. It's been really good so far. I think what's really helped us out is basically the fact that it's such a great character, really. And the idea that it's coming back is really quite amazing. Basically, what I think has been really good is the energy which people have been approaching this idea. We haven't had any material so far, but still the fact we're talking about the posters and there's been a few pages there, it's really gone a long way forward. Like, I've had a few older guys talk to me, and when I've engaged it there, they've been really quite nice. Because I said we're trying to be as constantly up. We're trying to do the folk material
justice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for finishing my sentence, Twin.
You were struggling.
I am a struggle. I apologize. Basically, I haven't seen anything negative so far.
I saw a couple of things online that I thought, well, you know, if you're judging something, and it's understandable, there's not much content out there at the moment. But to judge a story based on one image is a little short-sighted. And I think, you know what, that's okay, because we probably weren't going to get you in the first place.
Even better, though, would be if they have given the chance and read it there and go, well, you know what, they're doing the right thing by the character. They love folk. They're doing everything they should be doing. Yeah. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, look I have had a couple of traditionalists come along, but they've been very, very accommodating, let's say that. I even got a traditional phantom drawing request at one of the cons, so I did my very best poor man's version of a Cy Barry phantom. And
he underplays himself once again. This is Paul doing the worst Paul Mason impersonation of all time.
His actual
art was actually lovely. He should give himself more credit. Look, I honestly think this book's...
I don't need to when I got you. The reception so far has been very warm to very, very excited, and I'm hoping it stays that way. I love the character, and I'd hate to have people think that we're going to harm it anyway. Let's say that. I know it is a different art style. I was very conscious of that, and I've had work in the past where I've put it in front of editors and publishers of certain places that have maybe it hasn't fit their wheelhouse, and usually, you know, a lot of companies might have a certain house style, or they might call certain aspects of my work retro because it reminds them of a poor man Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko-ish or something like that. But then you have people that might say, oh, that's too contemporary or too edgy for them, and look, that's fine too. At the end of the day, I feel like there is an audience somewhere, as long as you have the fundamentals down there and have the love behind it. I don't know. I'm sounding a bit wishy-washy.
Speak from your heart.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I do my best, and I'm hoping that it resonates. That's all I can do.
Just put
it out there and hope.
You just have to do the work. You can't second guess yourself.
As soon as you start second guessing and trying to accommodate everybody, you get terminated Genesis.
I think it's about, we keep on going back as being true to the source material there, like making sure that you do the right thing by the books and also by the comics here, and just make sure.
Yeah, we can't go in there and just light a fire and rock star it and do some donuts and hope that,
It's so we're taking this seriously. We're doing our utmost work to be true to the book as much as possible.
And to the character.
Absolutely.
Well, the four of us at Chronicle Chamber have been very lucky to have already seen issue one or a PDF of that. And I think I speak for all of us when I say what you're saying about being true to the character and true to the source material is so evident that it really is the Phantom as we know it and as we loved it and always have. So I think you've done really, really well at that. And I also, and I know you know this, Paul, but I printed it out and my seven-year-old son has read it and he loved it as well. And he particularly liked the art. And that was, I guess, the heart of my question before about getting in the head of a young kid, because you certainly got in his head and he just loved it. So hopefully that follows through more broadly too.
Is there any plans for like a range of, I don't know, freebies or pester power items with the comic, or even like stuff
with, should like, say sold that
through website or anything?
Funny you should mention that. Yes. We can't talk about it yet though.
Yes.
So that's a yes.
That is a yes.
There's a yes. There's good stuff coming.
Yes,
but we can't say what it is.
Yeah,
that's all right. So I guess the good thing about that is there's a lot of collectors out there that have more stuff, and then there'll be a lot of wives and partners that won't be excited because that planned holiday will probably have to be pushed back a little bit further. So that's good. That's good to hear. And I think they're the type of things that are going to really encourage the kids and the and then also like the collectors who may be a bit hesitant. They might have been a bit hesitant at first, but then if there's something free or then they're more likely. I reckon that's good. And I know for my daughter, she's picked up like a Peppa Pig or a Nickelodeon magazine, and they had the stickers and little figurines, and she loved it. She's flicks through the book now and stuff like that, and she absolutely loves it.
No, I agree. I think it's something that, you need those little bit, something visual for that. I guess in a sense it's a reward for being loyal to the Phantom, club, absolutely, so to speak, or build that growing community that we hope that will be fostered from something that appeals to a younger audience as well. Because at the end of the day, a lot of the comments that I get at the show are, oh, my father loves the Phantom, or my mother loves the Phantom, or my grandfather. And, for those collectors out there, you need a modern relevance for that stuff to be still have a resonance with that younger crowd for that in order to...
And who doesn't like cool? And who doesn't like cool stuff, though?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I want toys. I want to look at this stuff on my shelf. Like, he's such... And I think Paul and I were talking about this recently, such an iconic character. There's no one out there that looks like him or looks as cool as him.
Mm.
So, and imagine that. Imagine giving that version to a child, but also emulating that child with a junior fan or a young Phantom as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you gave me that when I was a kid, I would have done a cartwheel followed by a cartwheel followed by a backslip and then a dive.
It's exactly like toy commercials too, in a sense that, young kids' toys aimed at them with slightly older kids in the roles running around with that particular toy, so it looks cool. So you would assume that, by extension, having that that younger character around young kids can connect to. It's the whole reason why Robin was introduced in the Batman series in the first place.
I thought Robin was just cool, though.
Did you? You're an idiot.
No. It was deflection. You know, you dress in black and you hang in the shadow and you go, look at the yellow kid over there. Look, you know, aim your weapon in that direction. No, but that's child endangerment laws aside, superheroes. I think it's just those cool aspects. You know, you wouldn't have adults running around with Nerf pistols on a commercial trying to sell them. Don't reach that younger generation. You would hope that the modern zeitgeist of art direction might hit the mark. So we'll see. Sales numbers, I guess.
Look, it's going to be good. It's going to look great. The stuff we've seen so far, the production sketches there, looks wonderful. Paul's been involved with a lot of the material as well. But you guys will get to see it very, very soon.
Sounds great.
No worries. Well,
so just, Paul, you'll actually have the chance to speak directly to a lot of the traditional and the older and the forecasts when, and this has been announced in the last couple of days, that you're going to be the special guest at the 2017 Lee Fork Memorial Bengala Explorers Club dinner in Sydney in June. So are you excited about that? Are you nervous about that?
I am both. I've had a look previously at the speakers that they've had in the past for the Explorers Club dinner, and those are mighty big shoes. That's a mighty big act to follow. That's like being a stand-up comedian and Louis C.K., Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock shot on the card before you, and you have to follow them. So that's a big legacy and an honour there, you know. Apart from the fact that you're dealing with, you know, raising money for such a good cause, the Westmead Children's Hospital and what have you, I'm very excited, but at the same time, I'm extremely nervous. I know that I feel like I'm going to be the kid walking in with the backwards cap, you know, putting the feet up on the desk. So I hope I don't give that impression. I'm looking forward to speaking with them. I'm hoping I don't fumble my words too much. I know I'm a lecturer, but every day when I have to talk in front of people, it's very nerve-wracking. You know, I used to instruct. I used to have a martial arts school, and I also sparring coach for the Australian Taekwondo team. So at least when I was talking to people, if I was nervous, I don't think that's going to happen at the dinner.
No, that won't happen.
So I'm just hoping that I don't make an idiot of myself. I don't cause any controversy because I know that my style is not in the vein of the previous Phantom stylist, but I'm looking forward to trying to wave the Fru flag and the Phantom flag high and proud, I guess.
Excellent.
Yeah, I go to that. I've been going to that dinner for probably about 8-9 years now.
Wow.
And I'm to this day, I'm still probably one of the younger ones,
nice.
Which is kind of scary because I'm almost reaching middle age.
Same age, I recall. So yes. Yeah, we'll be in the crash, Jason.
Yeah. We can play for the. At least we'll have the comic books to read.
Yes,
but no, I think it will be good. So are you planning on going to any other Comic Cons or Supernovas in the next couple of months for Phantom fans around the world, around Australia?
Well, you should mention this. We're going to be doing the rest of the Oz Comic Con tour this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we'll be in Brisbane, Melbourne, and also Sydney there. I'm also going to be coming to the dinner as well to just egg Paul on.
Or egg me.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I'm going to be busy on the day. So far, it looks like I'm going to try and make my schedule there. But it looks like that's going to be the extent of my year. But Paul might be at somewhere else.
Yeah, I'll be definitely at the Oz Comic Cons for the rest of the year, and which is we just did Adelaide and Perth. There'll be Melbourne around about the same time. Sydney and Brisbane in September is currently on the cards. And then wherever Fru appear, which I believe will be Sydney, around about the same time as the dinner, will be definitely there.
Yeah, it'll be this awesome. So, Phantom fans, if you're out there and you'll be able to go meet them and tell them whether they're doing a good job or not, which...
That's a good job.
And I'm sure if you're after dates... Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney siders. That will just Google Comic Con Australia, and those dates will appear.
Yep. .com.au, I think. Yep.
So I was just going to say, just to give Andrew and Paul an opportunity to plug any other websites you've got or social media links where people can follow your stuff and see your progress and keep up to date with how you and Kid Fandom is progressing.
I basically use ESP and also Smoke Signals, but you don't get those. I'm on Facebook under Andrew Constant, and I'm on Twitter as A Constant Words.
I carry a pigeon. Just Google me. No, I'm kidding.
Google me.
No, don't Google me.
Don't get it real.
Paul Mason is the world's fattest man. and there's some pretty awful Google images that come up that you don't want to look at.
You know everyone's going to Google Paul Mason
now.
Go
ahead.
It's like, you know, wet paint. Everyone's going to test whether it's wet.
Yeah, don't think of pink elephants. Yeah. No, I'm on Facebook. You can find me. There's my soldier hat, little Dr. Paul Mason, or facebook.com/MasonComics. I don't actively search for people to like that. It's just I didn't want to bother the Souls of Legacy readers with anything that's probably not pertaining to that particular book. Yeah. But you could also find me on Twitter, pmason83, Instagram. I think that's all the social medias taken care of. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Google. Yeah.
No worries. Do any of you guys have anything you want to say before we wrap up?
I just want everyone to be able to have a chance to have a look at the book, just because it's, I know Drew's put their heart into it, we're putting our heart into it as well. We just, it's really going to be a great book for young readers to fall in love with a character which we love so much, and also a chance for old readers as well to connect with something they may have not seen about the Fandom before, those lost moments in time, to paraphrase Blade Runner. But really, we just want everyone to be able to have a look at the book and have the same enthusiasm for the character that what we do.
Yeah, I'd like to, what's the term I'm looking for? Support that. What he said. if you are on the fence about it, please check out the first couple of issues, because I'm really enjoying reading scripts.
I'm enjoying looking at the art.
Wardorf and Statler here. As one Phantom fan to another, I mean, we're fans at heart. We love the source material.
Yeah.
We're having a lot of fun on the book. People give us the chance. But at the same time, I'm really hoping that new readers come on board. You know, tell your friends and all that sort of nonsense.
Dan, you got anything you want to say before we sign off?
I just want to say very heartfelt thank you very much to you two guys to give us so much of your time tonight. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure that all the Fandom fans do. And so much of what you've said really heartens me as a Forecast and a traditionalist at heart. So much of what you've said makes me think that this is just going to be a magnificent addition to the Fandom canon, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it in print and starting to read it with my kids, most importantly. So thank you very much.
That's lovely.
Thank you so much.
If I can just say too, there is a little character that doesn't make any.
No, don't give it.
All right, Paul's, I want the kids to find it and tell me.
Paul's done something really cool that when we come back after a few issues in, we will tell you all about it.
But awesome.
It's a nice little bit. It's like a Where's Waldo for kids. It's not huge, but if you can find it, it's on every page. Isn't that right?
No, I wouldn't say every page, but it's in there.
Yeah.
And we'll...
I wonder
if we can figure that into a competition one day. I can give away a free piece of artwork or something.
That's cool.
Something like that. Yeah.
But, yeah, we want everyone to love the book as much as what we do, basically. Yeah.
And look, we very much appreciate your time too, fellas. Yeah. I came across you guys before I even hit the Fandom books, and enjoyed your interview with Cy Barry. That was very nice to hear from professionals talking. You're always very thorough. I don't mean to sound like a suck, but it's true. I enjoy your work. I enjoy your support of whatever is out there. Critical or not, you're always coming in there with the heart of fans, and we very much appreciate your time as well.
That we do.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Well, I just wanted to echo one of the things that I loved most about it was the Easter eggs in the story, and I think that shows the fact that yous are fans. Like, when you see the skull thrown, and I've told you this before,
Yeah,
I'm glad. You see the skull throne. You see the Chain of Patience, which was a Sunday story, and
And it's also in the novel, which I loved that story, so that's why it made it in there.
Yeah. In issue 3, we get him to I'm not going to tell you a thing.
what a tease!
There's nothing worse than someone telling you what's going to happen before it does. Suffice to say, there's pirates, there's travel, there's adventures, there's a lot of stuff from the novel as well. We're not skimping on one bit of the source.
Definitely, and I think when these fans who maybe are hesitant give it a go, I think they will agree with that. And then I think everyone else who is just looking forward to it will have a great time with it. And we just thank you for your time, and thank you for giving the character that we all love a good shake.
Thank you, gents. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much again. Cheers.
All right, no worries. Thanks again. We'll keep in touch.
We'll see you, gents, in June.
Will do.
Bye, fellas.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining us. It was really good. As always, everybody, you can find us on social media. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. And as always, we have Patreon, which basically allows people to support us and where we can pay for this podcast and pay for features on the website and stuff. And Dan, you were saying that there was something you would like to add to the website.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know how many people noticed, but for about 2 weeks, about a month ago, we had a search feature on the website, so you could just type into that and come up with all of the pages. So if you're looking for Kid Phantom, for instance, or Andrew Constant, or Paul Mason, you can just type those words in every article that we've published on those.
Dr. Paul Mason.
they would come up quite easy to find. So we had that for a couple of weeks. It was a trial feature, we found out, and it does cost us money to have the search function up there, and quite frankly at the moment we don't have the cash to do it. So I think it would only take one listener to swing us $5 a month via Patreon, and we could have that up on the website as well, which would be helpful for everybody. So if you enjoy listening to podcasts like this, which we are able to do with creators, and we feel very lucky to be able to do it, but hopefully you enjoy listening to them and reading the stuff that we do, then it would be great if you could sling us $2 or $3 a month. Cover is the cost of one Phantom comic, so surely that's not too hard for people to come up with. But anyway, people can afford what they can afford. If they can do it, they can do it, and that would be fantastic.
Not a problem. Well, as always, happy Phantoming. And Stephen, you missed out. You should get over it. It's just a football game. Dan, have a good one, mate.
Thank you. It was very serendipitous that Hawthorn lost today by such a margin.
Years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck. And upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, "I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
The Phantom!
The ghost who walks!
The Phantom!
Enemies beware, the Phantom's always there, but you won't mind the Phantom.